Now means it's time to have a chat to Louisa Rose, Chair of the Barossa Cellar. Good morning, Louisa.
Good morning, Philip. How are you going?
Yeah, really well. How are you?
I'm fantastic, thank you.
Excellent. Thank you for making time to join us on the show this morning. I think probably the most pertinent question is, what is the Barossa Cellar?
Well, the Barossa Cellar started as a collection of wine and has turned into an amazing collection of wine, an architecturally beautiful building that's become the hub of the grape and wine community in the Barossa, and an historic vineyard of just over 1 hectare. So a project that started small but has become something that will be there for the future of generations to come.
And what is the reason for the Barossa Cellar to be? Why did it come into being?
Right. Well, it started in 2011, and in many conversations, you know, over the decades before, when we decided, we being Barons of Barossa, which is a wine and heritage fraternity of like-minded people in the Barossa, and we decided that on behalf of the Barossa, we could start to collect wines from the wineries, age them to their optimum, and give them back to the Barossa community to use to benefit the Barossa. We'd known for years how easy it is to ask, well, not necessarily to ask, but certainly the, you know, Barossa winemakers are incredibly generous, as winemakers are all over Australia, I might say. If there's an event happening that's for the community, you know, they always want to provide wine. How much can we give you? Are you sure there's nothing else that you want? So we knew that wine was something that winemakers would donate for the right cause. But to get wine with any age on it was always much harder because most winemakers don't have the ability, you know, usually in terms of space, to hold very much. And, of course, there's always a cost in not selling wine and holding it back. So
We
thought, well, why don't we get the wines as young wines, as we've always been doing, but instead of using them straight away, sell them and then use them, you know, perhaps with, let's say, a minimum of 10 years of age on them. So sounded like a great idea. Put out the first call. Everyone was really enthusiastic. Collected all this wine and go, now where are we going to put it? And, of course, space is one of those issues that, you know, that every business has. So while we did have some wineries look after parts of the collection for us for a while, we realised that as this collection started to grow, and, of course, that's the important thing, that not only was it just one call out, but we'd you know, ideally like to have the next vintage and the next vintage and the next vintage of all these wines, so that in the future we could look at verticals or we could compare the same vintage across different wineries or whatever it may be. So we realised we needed somewhere to put it, and we started looking at options to, you know, purchase some, you know, quiet dark cellar somewhere. And then we thought, well, if we're going to have a quiet dark cellar somewhere, wouldn't it be amazing if it was not only a quiet dark cellar, but it was actually somewhere that people could come and visit, and it was, you know, it had a life to itself. And that's where we ended up with the designs, you know, for, you know, a beautiful building that's got a cellar and a display vault built in underground, but it's also got a beautiful event space that can be used by the wine industry for, you know, whether it be meetings or whether it be tastings or whether it be grand dinners. We can put a long table right through the centre of the hall that seats 100. We put a commercial kitchen into it because it needed, you know, obviously needed somewhere to cook if we were going to have a dinner. And it's also become the home of the Barossa Grape and Wine Association, which is our local association that supports, you know, grape growers and winemakers and the marketing of Barossa generally. So it really has become, you know, a life, you know, a place with life.
Yep.
And gradually becoming a, you know, place that the grape and wine community can meet. Not that there aren't lots of other great places for them to meet. Everyone's got their own cellar door, you know, the pubs are there, the restaurants are there, the wine bars are there, but it's just, you know, one more facet, I suppose, of what the Barossa wine industry now has.
It's an amazing resource, and I'm sorry if you said it, but whereabouts in the Barossa is the cellar?
So it's on the eastern side of the Barossa Valley. So it's looking away from the Eden Valley behind it, and it's got it's slightly elevated, so it's looking directly west across the Barossa, and it's at Vinevale on Stockwell Road.
And was that site picked because of its views and how it looked, or was it just that's what was available?
No, well, a bit of both, but the former was very important. So once we knew we wanted somewhere, you know, that wasn't just a lock-up warehouse, we knew that its position was important and we wanted it to have a view.
Yeah.
And the land was owned by one of the barons, Baron Leo Peck, who unfortunately is no longer with us, but he you know, he didn't donate it, but he did give us a very good price. So we took 2.9 hectares of his land and bought that and started to develop it.
Awesome.
And that was it. So we bought that in. So the dream, if you like, and the collection started in 2011. We bought the land in 2014. We're just about finished now.
And Louisa, just, you know, you obviously set this up, you know, it started, you know, in 2011 and it's evolved from there. But what do you think it will be doing, or what do you hope it will be doing in 10, 15, 20 years from now?
Well, I hope that the wines will continue to be used to promote the Barossa, whether they be within the Barossa with groups coming in and looking at the wines, whether they be in the cellar with winemakers coming and doing masterclasses and tasting, or whether they're being, hopefully, picked up and taken on an aeroplane across to London or New York or Hong Kong or Shanghai and used to showcase, you know, beautiful what the Barossa is, you know, with maturity on the wines and, you know, with this understanding of how collegiate, wineries and winemakers are. And I've, you know, the Barossa has that in spades, but as you would know, that it's not exclusive to the Barossa, that collegiate experience. It's, all wineries know and all winemakers know just how much better you can do if you support each other and promote it, you know, as regions or states or as a country rather than just as individual brands.
Absolutely, and that's one thing I do love about the whole wine industry is it's hospitality at its core, and so it's welcoming people and, you know, community and generally, you know, being nice to each other, which is great. You know, who wouldn't want to be part of that?
Who wouldn't want to be part of that, exactly? And, you know, every time somebody has a glass of wine or a bottle of wine from somewhere, you know, they're experiencing that, you know, whether they know it or not, and that's so much of what's gone in to make that wine special.
And So, backtracking again, I guess I should say that I found out about this specifically from one of our regular listeners, Christopher, and good morning, Christopher. He's already sent us a whole lot of pictures of the wines he's been drinking. There's one Barossa in there. He had the Hentley Farm H Block 2017.
Yeah, good choice.
And he's just messaged and said he would love to visit the Barossa cellar. Like, I know you said it's not a cellar door per se, but will consumers at some point be able to go and have a look and do something there?
Yeah, so what we're in the process of doing now is sorting out what we can do in terms of experiences for people to be able to come and do just that, because, you know, it is an amazing thing and the pictures are fantastic, but it's even better in person. But it won't, well, I never say never in this world, but, you know, at this stage, we're not set up so that people can just pop in and, you know, off the street, so to speak, at any time. It's not a cellar door. We don't have wines open for tasting all the time. So what we're hoping to get is a series of experiences that people can look into, whether they be food and wine experiences, whether they be wine tastings, or perhaps just tours through the place, so that people can absolutely do that. But it will need to be pre-arranged. And what I think I probably intimated it, but I didn't actually say it, is that all of this work has been done by volunteers. So we would love to have a full-time person or two that, you know, that was there employed to put 100% of their time into it. But at the moment, you know, we are still paying off some of the debt for the property. So yep. I should tell you that, you know, the whole project's been about a $5 million project. The Barons had just over $1 million that we put into it as sort of seed funding that bought the land and started the project. But we've raised over $2.5 million in donations. Two-thirds of that in cash, and the rest of it is in kind. And pretty much everybody that's worked on this, the building or the, you know, the vineyard or whatever part of the project it might be, has done it, you know, with some sort of in kind, whether it's, you know, 100% in kind or whether it's just doing it at cost price or just throwing in a few things here and there for nothing. It's just been this incredible project that's, you know, every person that sort of touched it has just, you know, wanted to contribute, and we could never have done it without that.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, there is still $1.5 million loan that we have to pay back to the state bank, which we do, you know, and we will continue to fundraise, you know, to be able to do that over the next few years. And then, you know, once we've got that over, you know, there will be more opportunity. And look, you never know what other opportunities might come along. There might be grants and things that we can set up some sort of, you know, tourist hub. So that's a long-winded answer, but, you know, I think it's important for people to understand that, you know, it's not just wineries being generous with, you know, donating wines, as they always are, but it's, you know, the whole community, and not just the Barossa community, but the wine community from all over the world have got excited about this project and wanted to be part of it. And in fact, part of our fundraising is that you can actually own your own vine in our Barossa Cellar vineyard.
Amazing. Yep.
Yeah. So, you know, for a mere $1,000, you can own a piece of Barossa heritage.
That sounds awesome. That is very exciting prospect, isn't it? Now, can I just to keep going on the actual cellar itself?
Yeah.
What kind of volume, without giving away too many sort of trade secrets, but what kind of volume do you envisage holding? And how much of each particular wine will you put away in the cellar each vintage?
Right. So, look, there's no secrets. Yep. And that's one of the beauties of a community project like this is, there's no reason to hold any secrets.
Very good.
So, at the moment, we've got just shy of 6,000 bottles.
Yep.
And that is literally increasing each week because there are still new wineries wineries that are starting to come on board and say, oh, we actually want my wines in there as well. So we've got nearly 100 wineries now, just under 6,000 bottles. We've got nearly 200 large format bottles, so everything from magnums up to 6 and 9 litre bottles. So when it's large format, it's usually just a couple of, maybe one, maybe two bottles. But usually when people donate wines, they donate, a minimum of 6 bottles.
Yep.
And sometimes more. And it's very much up to the winery themselves. And, of course, the more they donate, I suppose the larger audience will ultimately be seeing their wine and the events that we'll be able to use it for.
So it's not huge quantities. You're not putting down 10 dozen.
No, but you don't need huge quantities. So,
yep.
One of the things that we know about great wine is that when you have the opportunity to look at, great wines, you don't need to polish a whole bottle of each wine off yourself.
Yeah.
And when these wines are used, it won't be just one vintage of one wine from one winery showing. It will be, it might be, 10 consecutive vintages, or it might be, 10 wines from 10 different wineries, all of the same variety in the same vintage from the same sub-region, or you can just think about all of the different sort of combinations. And it's surprisingly how far a bottle can go.
Yeah.
So if you were doing a tasting, and I know when we've done tastings actually out at the Yolumba Museum, and maybe this is pre-COVID days when we were prepared to share glasses, but you could have 20 people quite easily, maybe 25, really have a good taste of those amazing wines. So we'll probably have to rethink some of those protocols in the future, but, you can still get a lot out of these wines. And if you've got, 4 or 5 or 6 bottles of a wine, at a dinner, and there's another sort of, 9 or 10 wines from wineries on the table, that's still plenty of wine to get a really great appreciation of it. So, 6 bottles doesn't sound like a lot, but let me tell you, when you've got 6,000 of them and you stand back and look and you go, wow, there's a lot of amazing experiences for the world to see the Barossa in this cellar.
And you're back on The Wine Show. My name is Phil Smith, and joining us on the phone from the Barossa is Louisa Rose, Head of Winemaking at Yolumba, Chair of the Barossa Cellar and Grandmaster of the Barons of the Barossa. Louisa, before the break, we started to talk about the vineyard that you guys are planting and how people can become a vine owner. But could you tell us about the vineyard that's attached to the cellar, please?
Yes, I can. So we bought 2.9 hectares of land and needed about half of that for the building. And, of course, what else do you do when you've got a hectare of spare land in the Barossa? You have to plant a vineyard. So we spent a long time thinking about, if just a hectare, what would you plant to represent the Barossa? Would you look at all of the varieties? Would you, do a blend? Or would you do something crazy like all the varieties? And we sat back and we thought, well, really, Shiraz is a variety of the Barossa. We know how versatile it is, how different it looks from all the different regions, whether it's Barossa Valley and its sub-regions or the Eden Valley. And we've got such a beautiful old history, of over 170 years of vines. In fact, we still have some of those vines from the 1840s on their own roots still growing. So we thought Shiraz has got to be. And what we did was we went out and we asked the owners of the oldest Shiraz vineyards in the Barossa if we could come along and take cuttings from their vineyards, propagate them, and plant a row of source material from each of those vineyards. And so that's what we've done. We've got 35 rows of old vine vineyards from vineyards, some of which you will know well because they're associated with brands like the Henschke's Mounted Austin and Langmaer the Freedom Vineyard, which of course is the oldest Shiraz still growing anywhere in the world, planted in 1843. And Elderton Command, and now I'm having a middle back. There's 35 of these amazing, amazing sort of Shiraz vineyards. Some of them still very much privately owned. Some of the vineyards that you wouldn't recognise the name or the family that own them, but you would probably know the wines that they go into.
Yep.
So we've got this resource. We had them propagated up. We got everything ready, and we planted them about 3 weeks ago. So they're baby vines, still in their vineyards, and ready to start to shoot. And as I mentioned before, one of the ways that we've started to fundraise for the for this whole project was to sell these vines, so people could buy a vine. And very soon, the people that have already bought a vine will know where their vine is. In the future, people will be able to actually choose what row their vine is in now that we've actually got the vineyard in the ground.
Yeah.
And keep an eye on that vine, you know, for the rest of their lives as that vine grows and ultimately becomes an old vine itself. Our plan is to make wine from the vines once they're old enough, so that'll be probably in 3 or 4 years. And we'll just make one batch of wine. There's not enough in each of them to make wine, but there'll be one batch of wine. And one of the advantages of being a vine owner is you'll have the opportunity to buy that wine, and it will only be available to people that have a vine in the vineyard.
And that's what an amazing store of material as well that you guys would be able to access as part of, you know, I guess it's a vine cellar instead of a wine cellar. Will you be sort of testing and getting to know more about the vines that you've cut as well?
Yeah, look, I think it's a really, really interesting opportunity to explore the DNA of, you know, all sorts of what Shiraz means. And in fact, really some, you know, the early Shiraz that came into Australia.
Yeah.
When we know it came in via New South Wales, so that, you know, there's no doubt about, you know, some of its origins, but, you know, how they're related to each other. And as we understand more and more about, the genetics and the genome of grapevines and how they change based on where they are and all the sort of idea about epigenetics, I mean, what we could learn as science keeps up with our dreams and our questions over the future could be, you know, really quite incredible.
Oh, I know it's such an exciting thing for a wine nerd like myself just to learn more about the history of how Shiraz, like you say, how Shiraz has changed and, you know, the quality factors from the old material versus the newer stuff. What a great idea.
Yeah, no, it will be amazing. And I know there's quite a lot of vineyard owners that are really quite keen to know, you know, who might have hopped over the fence many decades ago and pinched a few of their cuttings and planted their own vineyard. So we might be like the Shiraz police. We might be able to draw a family tree of, you know, whose vineyard came from whose vineyard.
This is potentially like some of those genetic websites causing more hassle than it's worth, though.
I have a funny feeling that it'll just be another really great excuse to have another glass of wine and share the story.
I think that might be right, too. Hey, Louisa, I'm very conscious of not taking up too much of your time, despite how many questions I have for you. So
it's my pleasure. It's no problem at all.
I'll just ask you one more line of questioning, and we'll also carry on with the rest of the show, but you've had been able to work with a lot of great vineyards in the Barossa and obviously, you know, some amazing fruit materials. If you had an ideal vineyard in the Barossa, where would it be and what would it look like?
No, that's a question I've never had. I've had a lot of my, you know, who's your favourite child questions. Well, I to be perfectly honest, and I absolutely mean this, that the opportunity to have a vineyard, the only planted one there, that has resource from all around the Barossa in the one place to be able to compare it, that has so many people, you know, from around the Barossa contributing with ideas and help in the vineyard. I mean, we've actually not paid a cent to put this vineyard in. Everything in the vineyard has been donated. You know, the vine, the trellising, the irrigation, and it's absolutely best practice Barossa as we know what Barossa viticulture should look like today. And our idea is that it will evolve and it will stay as best practice. So not only is it an amazing resource, but it will also be a showpiece to show people what Barossa viticulture can be. So I reckon we've got it already.
Excellent. That's great. It's very lucky that you can live the dream.
I'll tell you it is, and it is one of those industries that I think we can. And, you know, look, Rob, my heart goes out to all your listeners as well because, you know, while our world is not the same as it's been before, you know, we still have the freedom to move around, and I'm outside, you know, weeding my vegetable garden on my farm at the moment and just thinking how lucky I am for all sorts of reasons. So, all the best to all your listeners, and hopefully there's some some great wines that can be at least enjoying.
Absolutely. There's still good wine out there, and we can be grateful for that.
Yes, there is. The problem is that one of the great things about wine is the people that you share it with, and maybe that's not quite as easy these days. But I've heard stories of, you know, Zoom dinner parties and Zoom tastings and all those sort of things. So there's always those opportunities.
Yeah, there is. And it's temporary. It might be a long temporary thing, but better to be safe than sorry. And the wine will wait. You know, I've got a dinner that we're supposed to do at the start of the year where we're going to drink some 2010 Bordeaux. You know, we haven't been able to do that, but the wines are just getting better. So
yeah, that's right. They're not going.
Yeah, they're not going anywhere. So we'll just wait. We'll patiently wait, and it'll be worth the wait for sure.
I wish we all aged as gracefully, eh?
Very good, Louisa. I'm going to let you enjoy your garden for the rest of the morning. And thank you so much for joining us. We'll definitely have to have another chat because there's so many other things we could talk to you about. So please, we'll accept the invitation next time we call out.
Anytime.
Excellent. Thank you, Louisa. So that was Louisa Rose from Head Winemaker at Yolumba, the chair of the Barossa Cellar. If you want to find out more about the Barossa Cellar, it is barossacellar.com.au, or you can also go to thebaronsofbarossa.com.